Philip II of Macedonia, the situation in 340 BCE, part 2. Now, in part 1, we talked about what the people who wanted Philip to take the whole group and unify them and attack Persia. Well, now we're going to look at the opposite side. So in the meantime, while all the other material is going on, the philosopher Socrates argued that Philip should not be wasting his time and efforts fighting tribes in Illyria and Thrace. They're too distant from Athens to be worthy of much concern. And he is also taking great personal risk in the process. Quote, I assert that it is incumbent upon you to work for the good of the Hellenes, to reign as king over the Macedonians, and extend your power over the greatest possible number of the barbarians. End of quote. If Philip acted in this way, then all men would be grateful. Greeks would love him for his kindness, and for the foreigners, they'd been delivered from the barbaric despotism and are brought under the protection of the Hellenes. Isocrates is a very elderly philosopher, not a politician or a typical citizen farmer. He was not only Athenian intellectual urging Philip to unite the Greeks against the Persians. Ctesippus, successor to Plato at the head of the academy, criticized Isocrates' advice to how Philip should win the support of Greeks while fully endorsing the call for the king to lead a pan-Hellenic crusade. Aristotle also expressed support, and there's a good reason to believe that the basic idea appealed to many Greeks of all classes. For all the rationalization of the need to end the conflict between and within communities, at its heart was a primitive call. Quote, consider also what a disgrace it is to sit idly by and see Asia flourishing more than Europe, and the barbarians enjoying a greater prosperity than the Hellenes, end of quote, wrote Isocrates. Greeks despised the barbarians and knew to themselves to be inherently superior. Thus, it was simply not fair that the Persians should have greater wealth. Similar feelings prompted many tribal peoples in the ancient world to attack foreigners. We should not forget that beneath the veneer of the high culture of the Greeks, most Greeks felt similar urges. Probably it was no more strong than that, and certainly other concerns and ambitions were far more important to the day-to-day life and politics. While pride in the polis and a wish to uphold its honor militated far more strongly against letting some other state or king take the lead. Macedonia lay closer to the Persian Empire than the southern Greeks. The Persians still claimed Thrace, though it's hard to know whether this was ever in any sense a reality during the 4th century BCE. And Macedonia had been part of the Persian Empire for at least a generation. Its role in the Persian invasions of 480 and 479 were at best ambiguous, and the Macedonians had played no part in the subsequent conflict against Persia, not provided any of the mercenary hoplites who figured so much in the subsequent campaigns. There is no trace of a long-term hostility between Macedonia and Persia, or a real hint of this in the early years of Philip's reign. Atabarzus, the satrap who had hired and then dismissed Theban Pamenes, fled the Macedon after the failure of his rebellion against great king, and was treated as a guest by Philip. The conventions of hospitality were widely understood, and welcoming aristocratic refugees was rarely seen as an act of war, or even of hostile intent. Persian ambassadors went to Philip's court now and again, and a few years later, the former satrap returned home and was treated well. By 346 BCE, Isocrates felt able to appeal to Philip openly, but it's less clear whether the king had already hinted at plans for taking up the idea of a great pan-Hellenic war, or was simply addressed because he was powerful. While negotiating for peace during these years, he did make promises of future benefits to Athens, and presumably to other cities. According to one of the Athenian critics, Philip stated in a letter preserved on public display, quote, that if peace were made, Philip would confer such benefits on you as would stop the mouths of us, his opponents, benefits which he said would put down in writing if you were so sure that peace would be made, end of quote. When peace was made and no benefits actually appeared, Philip kept referring to them, making some wonder whether these were cryptic references to his willingness to lead the Greeks against Persia so that they could win rich plunder. All of this is guesswork, and it's hard to say that what even Isocrates read between the lines. The Persians are unlikely to have seen Macedonia as much of a threat at this time, while their relations with the major Greek city-states continued to be good. Deeper instincts as well, more intimate grudges and ambitions all made it almost impossible for the city-states to unite willingly under Philip's leadership, or that of anyone else. By this time, the threat posed by Persia was too distant. Isocrates had railed against the Persian-sponsored king's peace earlier in the century, but most had accepted it for as long as it lasted. In many respects, it was easier for Demosthenes to suggest seeking aid from Persia against Philip than it was for him or anyone else to speak favorably of recent and closer enemies such as Thebes. Too many Athenians resented the peace of Philocrates far more strongly than they yearned the humble Persia, and Isocrates' calls were drowned out, although no one considered prosecuting him, which is a clear indication of his significant political background. So now we have another group of people that have an idea of what they would like to do with Philip, but how is that going to happen? What kind of evidence transpired? Well, our next one will deal with Demosthenes, who certainly is more interested in war with Philip. Now, the sources for this, The Politics by Aristotle, The Histories by Herodotus, Histories, 12 volumes, by Diodorus Siculus, Peloponnesian War by Thucydides, and The Lives by Plutarch, Philip and Alexander, Kings and Conquerors by Goldsworthy, History of Macedonia, Volume 1 and Volume 2 by Hammond, In the Shadow of Olympus, The Emergence of Macedonia by Borgia. So I hope you enjoyed that. And as always, don't forget to come by the website, summahistorica.com or historyaccordingtobob.com, and ask a question, leave a comment, check out our merchandise, and if you like what we're doing, please feel free to support us. Thank you very much.